Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
It is the weekend. Thank you for joining us here on the Anfield Wrap. It is the weekend as we recorded before Bournemouth, but crucially after Liverpool 5, Everton 2. And James, one of the things I know you're fortunate to get in your position is a team sheet 15 minutes early. That must have been a laugh in the press box.
Yeah, I was. I think I was about as surprised as everyone else. I think when I saw the lineup, I thought there'd be a few changes, obviously, but yeah, not to that extent. And Jurgen does have previous, doesn't he, for throwing an unexpected one in with the derby. You think of, I remember when seeing Solanke's name on the team sheet a couple of years back, and but yeah, it was, you know, like anyone else, I thought, wow, that is a gamble in a game that means so much to so many people. But maybe he does know what he's doing after all, because it worked out all right.
Paddy Fitzsimons joining us. And Paddy, what did you think when you saw the team sheet land? I know some people were absolutely appalled as it sort of landed, like how important this is, the importance of making sure that we get one over Everton, the importance of the league position. Or did you just think Jurgen's got this?
Yeah, I think a bit of both, really. I think when I first seen it, naturally I was surprised. But I think the more I thought about it, but I think we spoke the last few weeks on these kinds of shows about at some point he's going to have to rest a few and rotate, and that's going to come into play at a certain time in the season. I thought it might have been Bournemouth, but once I give it a bit of thought, I thought to myself, Tuesday's game is massive against Salzburg, and he's the type of manager, and we know this over the years now, really he likes players in rhythm and in a bit of form. So I think he's thought to himself, this is the one where you maybe bring a few in, and then the rest of the lads come back in against Bournemouth, hopefully get a win, play well, and then because the turnaround is so short between Bournemouth and Salzburg, they're going into that game fresh rather than having virtually a week off in between. So yeah, I thought, I was surprised, and I thought it might have been Bournemouth, but when you think about it more, and obviously seeing the results, it all makes sense now. But yeah, I think that's his thinking, as these lads are going to have to get a rest at some point.
There's something about as well, Stephen, there's a little bit in here that's got my attention. Steve has joined us on the idea of Anfield's a bit of a protector and shield, but also it's a huge vote of confidence for those players he's bringing in. Those players, he's able to say to them, I'm picking you in a Merseyside derby, I'm not picking you against Bournemouth after the Lord Mayor's show when the big game's out the way. You're getting the big one, here's the big one. Grab it, enjoy the... And I thought the way Liverpool played in comparison to Everton, Everton played like a side full of so much fear, and Liverpool played with absolutely no fear, whereas Liverpool, it's Everton's free hit and Liverpool have got everything to lose.
Yeah, I mean... Hindsight's a wonderful thing, I suppose. You can say this now, we won 4-2, but it might have been like just a
five, mate. Let's remember the win out of one.
Yeah, 5-2, yeah. We won 5-2. But you know, as a mind game from the manager to give a player who's coming in cold like Shaqiri or Origi who's coming in, we know Origi can step up. He's shown more than capable this season that he can come in and be an ample replacement for anyone in that front three. But like Dyson Shaqiri, even like Lallana, I mean, Lallana was the one who worried me a touch on that sheet because I thought he might play as a six. And I thought he might get a bit bullied in there, but no, if you get bullied by Tom Davies, then there's nothing down for you, really, is there? But you know, to say to one of the players, listen, you're coming in to play this game, you know, Shaqiri must have just puffed his chest up and gone, yes, I'll have a bit of this. You know, and he didn't let the manager down, did he, to be honest?
They didn't let him down, Steve. I think there is that sort of... They're playing for all of us, but also it's back to this. He spent two and a half years telling them why they're all important. That you might not get that many games, but the games you do get matter. But also you're there to support these other lads. We're all in this together. And again, you know, we all hope we end this season with a very specific medal. But last season, for instance, in the aftermath of the Champions League final, it felt like it was the full squad, who, even if they hadn't done that much in the European games, knew they'd supported them by rotating in for the league games. And, you know, and I think that he's still got that spirit out of footballers who would be well within the right to think, I wish I played a bit more, is phenomenal.
I think you see it all the time with this team. I think you see the fact that you don't, you know, especially, I mean, look back to the Champions League final last year, the first two people who were on Jurgen Klopp's back when we scored the second goal was Dejan Lovren and Albert Moreno. You know, these two lads who aren't playing the game, but they're just so happy for this team to win. And You know, Klopp just shows again he's a man of his word, and he like last year I had a stat on the radio yesterday that last year in December he had 33 changes in total in the league games he played in December last year, which is a phenomenal amount of changes to make for this side, and he's been very, very sort of steady with his changes so far. So, you know, he's just shown he's a man of his word, and he's just shown that everyone is a valuable part of the squad now.
They all get to be valuable parts of the squad, James. The one thing you noticed, though, and it wouldn't surprise me if it's maybe a little different for Bournemouth. I take Paddy's point about rhythm, but I wonder if the rhythm he'll want to get is in the attacking players. It wouldn't surprise me if some attacking players, first team, in inverted commas, attacking players come back in for Bournemouth. Maybe he does one or two of the defence, because he doesn't. He plays the best back five available to him. Changes the other stuff, but plays the best back five he can play.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be intriguing, isn't it, to see that team sheet down at Bournemouth on Saturday, because I think it will give him food for thought, because I thought Salah, especially, more than Firmino, but both of them, I think, have shown signs of fatigue in recent weeks. You know, not been, you only have to look at the numbers to see that, you know, they've not been at their best. You know, I'm sure part of that is because, you know, they haven't had a proper break in, what is it, over 2.5 years now. So, you know, that's a big thing for him. Suddenly you look at someone like Origi come in, and just the energy and the dynamism that he gave the team, you know, just exceptional, the way he held it up, the way he was darting in behind. I mean, spoke to Andy Robertson afterwards, and going back to what we were talking about before about the environment that Klopp's created at Melwood, he said the reason why people like Origi and Shaqiri are able to come in and perform at that level, given the lack of minutes they've got, is, he said, because the training is so intense. He said, we train like it is a game. So that is why it's not a big leap to go from those sessions at Melwood to producing on that stage. And I think it also ties in that feeling of everyone being in it together. I asked Klopp about this recently, was the way he likes having a relatively small senior squad. I think, you know, people, there's always this clamour, isn't there, for something shiny and new and more new signings. But he said it becomes very difficult if you've got 22, 23 senior players, keeping them all hungry and keeping them with a belief that they've got a genuine chance of being involved. He said he'd rather have 18 or 19, because he said it's actually easier to handle the dynamic of a group like that.
Yeah, I think on the point about like the environment Klopp's created and things like that, I heard a lot of talk once that team came out that people were saying like, oh, these lads coming in, I've got a point to prove. But I think one thing you notice during the game is I don't think any of them do look like they have got a point to prove. The likes of Lallana, I think he's more than proved his points in this since Klopp's come in. Origi's definitely proved his worth. Shaqiri, I think from the start of last season up till Christmas around this time last year, I think he proved his points, and they didn't look like players, the lads who came in, with a point to prove or anything like that. Not in the sense they didn't play well, I just mean there was sort of a confidence about them where they just looked like they belonged, and that's the point that James was saying about Andy Robertson, saying like, this is the way we train, they all feel part of it, they don't feel like, oh, we're like the lads on the bench coming in, like, this is our chance, we must grab it. They just come in and go, well, we know we're good enough to play for this team, we know what we're doing. And I think that showed in the performance last night.
In the player in the front three, four, five who keeps his place is Mane, Paddy, and it was a phenomenal all round performance from him, especially first half, but even patches of the second. I mean, this is, you know, setting up two, scoring one. We rightly laud footballers like, for instance, Steven Gerrard, like, for instance, Kenny Dalglish. We're watching here one of the very, 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 very best players in the world hit is high performance level so regularly for us.
Yeah, I think it's been that stage for a while now. We've often talked about he's the one that you just can't see how you rest him and who fills his place. Like, you've seen Origi Depizar as well, a lot for Firmino. You've seen Shaqiri do well as a replacement for Salah, but I think Mane, the level he's playing at now, he's got to that point now where he's everything now. He's not just the goals, he's not just, you think, oh yeah, we need Mane out wide now, we need to keep him in the team for the pace. He's almost like a number 10 and a playmaker, and things that when he first signed, even in a great first season, you never ever thought he might get to that level of being. And the closest thing I can compare to at the moment, what last night reminded me loads of, is Coutinho, the 6 months before he goes, when he's on that left side and it's goals and it's assists and it's everything. It was all that for Mane. It was pace running at defenders and then the backing off because they're frightened of what he's going to do. But then as the backing off, he's got more space to run into and play balls in behind. And at the minute, he's definitely our most important player, and everything's coming through him going forward.
Can't live with him.
No, I thought he was phenomenal last night. I really did. I mean, when I got back in, obviously you get caught up in the atmosphere in the game and stuff. But when I got back in and watched the goals match today, that ball for the first goal is absolutely outrageous. I mean, we'll look past the fact that Pickford is absolutely no man's land. I don't know what he's doing, where he is, but the ball from Mane for that and for the ball for the Gershakiri goal as well. Just two pieces of exquisite skill. So I'm just gutted he never got another goal second half. I mean, would have, not only he's my nerves a little bit, but it would have topped off for what he deserved, because I thought he was phenomenal.
I think even the Pickford thing though, like when I've heard a lot of people say about, wasn't sure what he was doing, I think that's a bigger compliment to the pass than anything, because it draws him out to this extent that you think he might be able to get it. It's weighted that perfectly that he sort of got no choice but to come out, and then when an E takes it around, and that's just his pace and the quality of the pass.
It was more a starting point for me. If you look where he is before he even plays the ball, he's passed his penalties, but Pickford, it was a very, very strange performance from the keeper, I must admit. Like,
it's with Sadio, James, it is worth dwelling on, because we've got to not lose this in the hunt for the league title, in the glorifying of last season's Champions League victory, the 97-point season, but also in the fact that it's so week to week, the games come so thick and fast. You know, I'm sure, like me, you grew up watching videos occasionally in person. Kenny Dalglish, John Barnes, the list of the names. And this is currently Sadio Mane's Liverpool company. He is currently putting in performances that are historically brilliant Liverpool performances. He deserves to be mentioned in the class of those players.
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. The way he's performing at the moment does remind me of John Barnes, who was my absolute hero growing up. And yeah, it's just extraordinary, the consistency of him. And, you know, going back to the earlier point about Mane and Salah and Firmino, you know, feeling the strain, understandably, given their demands. You know, I don't know what Sadio's having for breakfast, but you know, it's just, you know, I think he was asked recently, wasn't he, about, you know, are you not feeling it? You know, I think he's only had a 2-week holiday is the most he's had for a number of years now, and he just said, oh no, tiredness is all in the head. And you can see he plays with a smile on his face. He just absolutely loves
I think a massive part of this is the enthusiasm. I think there's just so much, and I think you saw that last night there, because I think he realised there's so much space to play, not just Mane. It looked to me like there was like a real joy de vivre for Origi, for Shaqiri, for Mane. It was like they'd been let loose because there's all this grass that Everton have left them to run into.
Yeah, I mean, it was defensively, take nothing away from the quality of the attacking play, because I think Liverpool hit heights in that game which I think would have ripped to shreds most teams. But you know, defensively, Everton were absolutely all over the shop, weren't they? I think, you know, one of the biggest mismatches I've seen in years was Mane against Sidibe, who, you know, suffers the embarrassment of getting hauled off inside 35 minutes. But yeah, I think, what was it, only probably 3 or 4 months ago, Messi voted for Mane, didn't he, for the FIFA World Player of the Year. And you know, and you can understand why, because that's the kind of company he's in at the moment. I think he is a future Ballon d'Or winner. It reminded me last night, I think it's almost exactly 2 years since he missed that chance in the derby, which absolutely affected him so badly. I remember Klopp speaking about it weeks afterwards and basically saying, yeah, do you know what? This crisis of confidence he's in now goes back to that miss. He's really beat himself up about that, because it ended up costing Liverpool 2 points on that occasion. But now he doesn't seem to dwell on things. He's almost, he's got that self-belief in himself now where, yeah, of course he still misses chances. I mean, he should probably have had a hat-trick last night. But, you know, he now has that thing of, you know, do you know what? I'll get the next one. And, you know, it was a night of, you know, awe-inspiring brilliance in terms of the goals. But I think the finish for his goal, the fourth one, you know, he made that look so easy, you know, nonchalantly just placing it in the bottom corner 20 yards out from Trent's pass. Yeah, he's just an absolute joy to watch.
I think the one thing that is interesting with Sadio Mane, you do see this outpour of emotion from us sometimes when we score goals. And this is not to discredit any of the players, I'm sure, they're all fighting off the same hymn sheet. But I get the feel, you do get the feeling that he wants this more than anyone else, this league title. You just see it in him, you just see the determination and what he's put, the performances he's putting in week in, week out. He really, really wants to get us over the line this year.
I think you see as well how he's got a nice combative edge and spikiness to him as well. Like, if you meet off the pitch, he's an absolutely lovely fella who's so softly spoken. When you interview him, you actually feel as if you've almost got to invade his personal space to be able to hear what he says, especially in a noisy football ground, because he whispers and he's, you know, just a ridiculously humble, down to earth, as far away from a superstar as you could possibly imagine. But what I love about him on the field, I think especially this season, you saw him last night, he's not shy, is he? He was picking a few fights and there was the one with Yeremina in the second half. I mean, you know, Mina must be, you know, not far off a foot taller than him. Bay was, you know, he a good old grapple with him, and you know, I like to see that. You know, that was, and you can see that edge kind of running through the team.
I was about to say, Paddy, you see the needle with Robertson and Alexander Arnold as well in the game. I think there is that was a Liverpool side, and I do remember, I think that they were probably, if I say you're not shaken's the wrong way to phrase it. I think their hackles were raised by the way Everton celebrated the 0-0 going right the way back to Goodison, back in, and it felt to me like Liverpool had a little one. They'd remembered that. There was something in there, I think, where it was a bit like, you know, they almost wanted to show Everton that these Liverpool players do think they're a bit small time.
Yeah, I think the biggest difference about this team compared to any team I've ever seen is I grew up with the old adage of, like, the biggest, like, shame about being a football sport is knowing that the players don't care as much as you do. I think for the first time, definitely in my lifetime, these players definitely do care as much as we do, and they get it as much as we do, and they understand all them things. So when we're leaving Goodison last season, knowing that result's not great at all, they get the same feeling as well. They know, listen, we're Liverpool, we should be beating Everton, that's what we do. And I love the fact that they get it, and I love the fact that they know what Everton are like and how Everton react to things, and that's why last night was so massive for all of them. And it's no bad thing for, like, this group of players who seem like a young squad and seem like they're going to be together for a lot of years to get into a habit of beating Everton.
Okay, just out of interest, who was your man of the match? Are we all saying Sadio? Because you can make a Divock shout. There's
all three. Yeah, for me, I think Sadio was. I thought Sadio was instrumental in the goals. The way he went about his business was fantastic. As I said, I was a bit gutted he never got a couple more. But you know, you've got to give props to Shaqiri and Origi as well. I thought they were both fantastic. Shaqiri to come in from the cold and to literally put a shift in like he did. Never went hiding. Always wanted the ball. Got himself after some really tight spaces. And you know, big shout out to them two as well. But man, it was a different class.
Yeah, I thought the whole front four, and I'll include Lallana, and not because of how high he pressed up the pitch and how he was leading all the time. I thought he was brilliant last night, Lallana. I thought it really did remind me of how he's been at his peak at 16-17, and I think people often forget how important he has been and how good he's been for us. So I thought he really impressed me last night as well. And you can't argue with Shaqiri either, like, to come in like that, the minutes he's played and put in that kind of performance, even things like his touch and his passing, which are things that you do lose and things like that if you've been out for a while, was spot on. So all four of them
are we allowed to say that? You can say all four of them if you want, James.
No, I'll go for Sadio just because I thought his brilliance in that opening 20-25 minutes just set the tone for the whole night.
Okay, excellent stuff. Coming up, we've got Paula Mann to talk about cop-outs and the Rainbow Laces campaign. And we've got James's colleague from The Athletic, Peter Rutzler, to talk to us about Bournemouth. We'll all be back towards the end of the show to have a lovely chat about Bournemouth as well. It is the weekend, or it is the Anfield Wrap saying hello, get yourself ready. It's going to be a big one, but then they're all big ones these days, aren't they? As part of our work with Last Fan Standing, which involves me and John, or John, asking the questions on that app, and do download it and play the predictor quiz as well. As part of that, we've been running quizzes here on the weekend. I'm really pleased to do it and seeing who can be the Last Fan Standing, getting 10 questions right on the bounce, or see how far they get. And I've got Robbie joining me, Robbie Williams, which must obviously be a frustrating situation for you, Robbie. I'm sure that joke gets made a lot. I'm going to dodge it because I'm a class act. But you're going to go through these questions, but first and foremost, always great to beat Everton. And are you looking forward to the game against Bournemouth?
Yes, very much so.
It feels like this run's never going to stop at the minute, and obviously it has to at some point, but you don't quite see it stopping against Bournemouth, do you, Robbie?
No, the worst thing is this Liverpool team have made me feel rational about football. It's not what we're winning it for, really, is it?
No, not at all. Let's do the quiz then and see how you get on. Number one, who scored Liverpool's first goal in the 5th minute of the derby on Wednesday night? Was it Origi or Shaqiri?
It was Origi.
It was. Okay, we're flying here. The first couple are always easy, but they'll get you somewhere. Number two, who started in goal for the derby game? Was it Alisson or Adrian?
Adrian.
Indeed. Number three, Everton haven't beaten Liverpool since 2001. Is that true or false?
False.
It is false. 2010, the last time Everton beat us. Number four, which club did Origi join Liverpool from? Was it Lyon or Lille?
Lille.
It was Lille. Excellent stuff. Put your 4-on-4. Who was the referee for the derby game? Was it Anthony Taylor, Jonathan Moss or Mike Dean?
Mike Dean.
It was Mike Dean. 5 out of 5. We're doing well here, Robbie. We're hanging in there. Last two have been tight. Number six. This was Mike Dean's first time refereeing a Liverpool derby game. Is that true or is it false?
True.
It's false. You refereed Goodison in 2016. You got to the level of 5. I'll speak to John. We'll send you a T-shirt anyway. Don't worry about that sort of stuff. We'll get that over to you. But 5 out of 5 there. Yeah, I thought you were on the march. I thought you were going to go all the way.
No, and on the Robbie Williams thing, it could be worse. My middle name is also David James.
Excellent stuff. Got you covered right the way through the board there. You got done in confirmation.
Great stuff. Honestly, thanks very much, Robbie. Thanks for listening. Thank and thanks for playing the quiz this week. Robbie's got himself 5 out of 5. When John's back, I'll get him to toss up the scoreboard and we'll see who's going to be the leader going into the new year.
Okay, joined in the studio by Paul Amann, the founder of Liverpool FC's LGBT supporters group. Cop out. That's a bit of a mouthful, isn't it, Paul? But yeah, you're going to tell us a little bit about the Rainbow Laces campaign, Liverpool supporting it, why that matters and why that's a good thing.
Yeah, I was there match on the derby match on the pitch with my opposite number from Rainbow Toffees. And what's important about it is to engage other fans across both sets of supporters to help make sure that the match is a safe place for LGBT supporters to come to. When I started getting involved with Rainbow Laces and organising cop-outs, too many people were saying they weren't sure whether it was safe for them to come to the match. They feared that they might get harassment, they might get people turn on them, and that kind of mob mentality fear is something which absolutely terrifies some people, obviously.
Yeah.
But through engagement, through working with the likes of Spirit of Shankly, through engaging with the club itself, it's become really, really clear that the majority of fans are brilliant and they want to show solidarity and ensure the safety of people as much as anybody else. And now they're the first to tap someone on the shoulder if they've been out of order. Mm. And so instead of stewards or ourselves having to get involved and go, oh, there's a problem over there, there's a problem over here, fellow fans are standing up and being counted, which is fantastic.
And it does feel to me and that, you know, I mean, I don't know, I'm not quite sure how old you are, Paul, but I'm 43, and it, you know, it feels to me that, you know, the climate, if you like, of going the match has changed over the years. You know, I think it feels more inclusive, it feels more diverse these days. Well, and, you know, and campaigns like this only help with that.
Well, I'm 50, so yeah, a few years on you, but it has changed over that time that, yeah, I've been going the match, and it's gone from a period back in the early 80s when my older brothers would tell me they're not going to the match, wouldn't advise me to go to the match because we happen to be mixed race. Mm. And that was a real barrier back in the early 80s, to the extent that my brother, who's moved to Trinidad, where my dad's from, has really been shocked that not only do I go to the match regularly, but that I'm out and gay and go to the match regularly. He'd have thought that just being mixed race was a big enough barrier. And obviously things have changed for the better. People are just more inclusive and recognising that a fan is a fan is a fan. And if you know, the ways of not supporting the club properly are to be fake and plastic about stuff rather than actually getting on and getting engaged with the club and seeing, following the game properly and supporting the club properly.
So what's your relationship with the club like then, and tell us a little bit about cop-outs as well.
So I've been working with the club voluntarily since 2011 through the supporters committee process. That was very much ups and downs. We had some great early successes in terms of changing of signage and making things loads better for fans on a public basis, so that the signage was there, the announcements were different. But then we wanted to make sure that we could perhaps invite larger groups of LGBT fans who were more worried about going the game, so that they'd have the backing and support immediately of other LGBT people around them. We didn't want that every match. We weren't asking for, you know, a block of 50 at the derby, but maybe a Tuesday night Burnley game, you know, half a dozen tickets together. And the club still haven't afforded us that opportunity, which is a real shame, because it would give those individuals who are really worried, and particularly some of our trans supporters, those people are very often the most fearful about going into a big crowd situation. And to know that there'd be a group of people around them who would immediately have their back would offer them their reassurance and also help educate the wider fan base even more that these are just another group of our fans.
Yeah.
And for an education process to take place both sides to realise there's no issue and all we want to do is support our club and sing and chant and make sure the club's winning.
And I think that's the key thing for me, is that, you know, so it feels to me that part of, you know, Liverpool's identity, part of Scouse identity almost, is that you want people to think we're sound, basically. You know, we like to go around and say we're a friendly city, we're a good laugh, it's a good place to come and visit, you know, and we want the match to be an extension of that as well. So sort of, you know, it just feels really antiquated, the type of behaviour that we still have to work to cut out. I mean, it does seem like it really is a minority now, and that is a change to the days we were talking about before. You know, once upon a time, I mean, I can remember when I first started going, and you know, I was just a young lad going, but some of the stuff I heard and some of the stuff I witnessed, I was a bit like, oh, it's a bit mad, this. You know, we've come on so much from sort of late 80s, early 90s, haven't we?
Things have moved on massively, yes, but there's still some minorities who are just, you know, to my mind and to most sensible fans' minds, they've got no space in the game because they shouldn't be there, because all they're about is giving other people nasty, nasty grief and really being rotten as individuals. And you see that with the assault that happened just earlier in the year, just within a quarter of a mile or so of Anfield, where a couple of gay guys happened to be walking down the street, get knifed in a homophobic attack. Just dreadful. That kind of stuff is still going on in our city, and we need at times to remember that the battle isn't won until that never takes place.
Yeah. I mean, is there anything more than that? You know, this is, you know, Liverpool have got behind this. Teams, you know, we mentioned Everton before, but teams right across the Premier League have got behind it. The Premier League itself is behind it. But I always think with these things, and I always think it's a pertinent question, is it enough, or is it, can it be a little bit tick box? You know, it's a bit like, okay, well, today we'll do this, today we'll wear these laces, today, you know, you're on the Anfield app, you've been doing other press as well and things like that, but we shouldn't all forget about it the day after. Do you know what I mean?
It's got to be ongoing.
Yeah.
It's got to be sustained. I've been made up that actually Liverpool have done things in a far more genuine way in recent years than some other clubs have. I was absolutely taken aback by the article in last night's programme with Jordan Henderson putting it out there loud and clear that anybody is welcome in that dressing room if they've got the ability to play and if they've got the team spirit. Doesn't matter what their sexuality or whatever. As far as he was concerned, as captain, as leader of our team on the pitch, he wants people to feel safe and enjoy the game. So to have that reinforced really positively by not just the chief executive in the sort of video he did a couple of years ago, but the captain on the pitch, Klopp wearing the rainbow laces himself. I don't think he took them out of his boots last year, did he? So, you know, it is a constant reminder. Yeah. And the club's work through the year on its education programme around local schools, its work through the stewards, the signage that's in and around the ground, it all reinforces positive behaviour.
Where do you stand on that? Because another thing that always does come up is the idea of, you know, the fact that we're in 2019 and we still don't have a high-profile footballer who, during his career, has come out. And we obviously had that strange situation on Twitter, which no one really knew what was going on there, and then it ended and we never found out whether it was a hoax, whether there was something behind it. I guess we'll never know on that score. But where do you stand on it? It's often put up there as being really, really important. It must happen at some point. But then I guess, is there also a bit of a fear that if it did happen, I'm sure they would be welcomed in the dressing room and everything else, but once they're on the pitch and they're around the country and they're going to all different grounds, it would only take a minority, wouldn't it, to create certain headlines in a certain situation?
I think it would be important to create the environment that it's safe for somebody to feel they can come out, and I'm utterly against somebody being forced to come out, or newspapers doing expose-type journalism, which is cheap, grim, and nasty.
Yeah.
What I would love to see is a player feel safe and confident to come out, for them to show their skills and abilities with the ball on the pitch, make sure that they are actually really demonstrating that they're a class player, and that's what the story would be about. Ideally, it would be amazing to have a really media-friendly person come out and turn people's heads, and, you know, really give their heads a wobble and make sure that they realise that they are a player that just happens to be gay. They're not the gay footballer.
Yeah.
To me, the gay footballer story is a nonsense when, in the women's game, it doesn't matter one jot.
Mm. And it's such a big thing, isn't it, around it? I mean, but the media will be the media, or certainly certain sections of the media will always be the media. But Paul, thanks very much for coming in. Liverpool did get behind that campaign in the Merseyside derby. The women will be doing the same in their fixture against West Ham United at Prenton Park on Sunday. Paul, cracking stuff. Keep on doing what you're doing, mate, and thanks for coming in.
Thanks very much.
Our friends at Totally Football have had an interview with Jamie Carragher. Fantastic stuff indeed, I'm sure. Jamie talking about all sorts of things and his new podcast as well. Do give it a listen if you can at Totally Football. Here's a little clip for you.
I think when I was in my late 20s, early 30s, in the dressing room at Liverpool, I think if you'd asked anyone in that dressing room who'd be a manager, me or Stevie Gerrard, I think probably 99% of people would have said me. I was
because
just
of your daddiness,
of course. But no, I mean, listen, I'm obsessed by football. I watched everything, I read everything. I do now. I always did as a player, consumed by the game. And I think Rafa Benitez and Gerard Houllier maybe put me off it in management in a little way, because they're the two biggest influencers on my career. The two of them together was 12 years of my Liverpool career. And the man who came in, I was so impressed with, and the man that left was just like a completely different person. That's what the job had done. I'd also been lucky that I'd played for Liverpool my whole career. I'd never had to do a normal footballer's life, if you like, of moving your family around the country every 3 or 4 years.
Right.
So probably that put me off a little bit. I'd done a little bit of punditry and a bit of coaching. I enjoyed the punditry a little bit more. It was ITV, I think, in the Euro 2012 at the first time, with actually Roy Keane, who's with us now on Sky. And I got the bug for that a little bit more. And to be honest, Sky asked me to do the job before someone offered me a coaching role, if you like. So I took that job.
Brilliant. Okay. How much would you have liked to play with Virgil van Dijk?
Oh, I loved it. I'm not sure Virgil van Dijk would have enjoyed it too much. But no, he, as I mentioned before, what he does to other players. I mean, the interesting thing is that he's seen as the, and rightly so, he's the leader. He's the daddy at the back. And I've never played in a football team where someone has told me what to do on the pitch. I've always been the person who told someone else what to do. So I'd actually quite enjoy that dynamic of actually who actually gave in, really, and accepted that the other one was going to tell them. And I can't see myself giving him. Virgil van Dijk's a far better player than me, but he wouldn't have been able to tell me what to do. It'd have ended up me having to tell him what to do, whether they needed it or not.
Totally Football, Ian McIntosh behind it, the brains behind the operation at Totally Football. Always good to check out what other people are up to, and this is a good opportunity to do so. So if you get the opportunity to give them a listen, do so. And it's good to see Jamie doing really, really good work as well. Everyone lovely, everyone kind. Listen in when you feel like it, if you can. This is Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Wrap. We'll get back on with the show. Delighted to be joined by Peter Rutzler, the Bournemouth correspondent for The Athletic. Said Bournemouth very strangely there. For The Athletic, the Anfield Wrap's working with The Athletic this year. Really pleased to be partnering with them, getting the insight from many of the fabulous correspondents around the specific football teams. And you can read everyone's writing on there, really, at theathletic.co.uk/TheAnfieldWrap if you want to sign up, and please do consider it. Got Peter on to talk about Bournemouth, and I've been talking about Bournemouth for 3 or 4 years, to be honest with you, Peter, with a couple of Bournemouth supporters. And this season's probably the first season I'd say I'm genuinely concerned that Bournemouth could very much end up dragged into a relegation battle. Am I right to be concerned, or do you think that actually they'll turn it around pretty soon?
Well, I can't really disagree at the moment. I think one of the things that have characterised Bournemouth during their time in the top flight has been their streaky nature.
Yeah,
you know, they do have a tendency to lose a run of games, then go on a good run of form. But as you're saying, I mean, form of late is not good. Tuesday was really, really poor. That's probably one of the poorest performances, if not the poorest performance they've put in the Premier League, against Palace. A game that they really needed to win amid the fixtures they've got at the moment. Obviously, Liverpool on Saturday and then Chelsea to come as well. Had been 1-10 before it, and it was one of those games that they had to pick up points in. And when Palace went down to 10 men, you'd back them, but it just didn't create anything. There was no imagination, no ideas. And Eddie Howe said afterwards that, you know, it's the lowest he's felt, and it's hard really to see it any other way at the moment.
It's one where it's been a bad 12 months, and that's why I'm concerned for Bournemouth. You can discuss the streaky thing, and I think it's been there, the idea that they are a streaky side. You know, I've said in the past, you never know with this team, we could just sort of win 4 out of 5. And then it all looks very different, and because it's so congested in the table, that's the case. But it's been a long, I think it's been a long time now since that 4 out of 5 has happened, and that's got to be the concern on the South Coast.
Yeah, I think the worrying thing is it's not just going to be 4 games this time. It really does look like it could end up being 6. Then after Chelsea, the trip to Chelsea, it's Burnley, and then it's Arsenal. So the worry is that it can spiral. And normally you'd say there are things to pick out. And I think in some of the performances, there were things. I mean, at Tottenham, there was a 3-2 defeat. There was a good comeback late on. the goals they conceded were soft, but there were promising signs. And against Palace, there was just none of that. And there was a similar sort of performance the week before Tottenham against Wolves in that first half, where they were just completely off the pace by comparison to the visitors, who were bright, who were quick and technically very, very impressive. And that's what's most concerning, is that there wasn't that sort of ideas. There's no creativity, and they seemed a little bit one-dimensional as well. I mean, they've dropped points against Watford, Norwich and Newcastle, and then obviously Palace midweek. And one of the things that's sort of, you know, been quite a common factor is they're sides that don't like to dominate the ball. They're not sides that will, you know, hold their own in possession and look to create. They basically gave Bournemouth the ball and said, go and break us down, and Bournemouth didn't really have an answer. Now, there's different factors in that. I mean, Ryan Fraser's not been in anywhere near the same form as last season. David Brooks has been out injured, and of course at the moment Josh King is also injured, so yeah, that hasn't helped. But at the same time, it's the players they are playing. Harry Wilson's done well. Arnaud Danjuma was signed for big money in the summer. He's slightly shown signs, but we're yet to see that consistency. He's slowly playing more games, and Callum Wilson's gone very, very quiet too. So it's a lot of factors sort of coming together at the moment, and the worry is that it will spiral.
You mentioned David Brooks there, and I just want to sort of, for people listening, he's been an enormous miss, I think, hasn't he? I think, you know, from a Liverpool point of view, where there's a lot of us want to see how Harry Wilson's going to do. He obviously doesn't get to play against Liverpool, but I think Brooks last season was both in terms of being able to hunt the ball down, really, really important on that right-hand side, but also was able to act as a creative hub. He was a risk-taker in possession. He was dynamic, happy to carry the ball. I think he's probably been missed more than people outside the Bournemouth bubble would appreciate.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I think he picked up his injury against Brentford in pre-season, and it looked like it was going to be a long time, and obviously his recovery hasn't gone smoothly. Eddie was saying last week that it's just they seem to make a few steps forward, but then it's not quite felt right, so he's had to take a step back. So we don't really know when he'll be back. He was supposed to be back around this time. And yeah, absolutely, it's a massive miss. And as you're saying, he is a risk-taker. He is dynamic. You know, he's very direct. He offered a great counterbalance on the right with Fraser on the left. And his work rate going back was really important. You know, the way Bournemouth like to play, it's a 4-4-2. The wingers push on. It makes put on a real threat in the final third, but also going back the other way as well. And I think Bournemouth have missed that. I think Harry Wilson's done well on that side, but he's not a winger in the Bournemouth sense, in that traditional sort of taking players on, beating them for pace and trickery. Harry's much more of a creative player, likes to drift in field, play a lot of passes, and he's very, very good at that. But at the same time, they've sort of missed that on that side. And, you know, with Fraser not firing as well, that's just sort of, that was sort of spiral of things coming together. But absolutely, I think David Brooks is such an important player. And I remember last season, it was his first year in the Premier League as well, and to make that step up in the way he did, start scoring goals and to really impact games, was mightily impressive. And yeah, without a doubt, that Bournemouth really do miss him.
It seems to me it's interesting that you mentioned the 4-4-2 that Eddie's broadly stuck with. I mean, he occasionally does go to three at the back. He might do that against Liverpool, but there's no telling at this stage, and I'm not expecting you to know the answer, to be honest with you. Football managers keep these things to themselves. But there is a, you know, on the whole, there is a 4-4-2, and in there he's added Philip Billing from Huddersfield, who I thought was impressive last season. Is there a little issue though where you know, Billing and Lerma, it's not a lot of creativity? We just had a little chat there about the difference between Brooks and Wilson, and suddenly the onus is very much on Fraser, or the idea that Callum Wilson can pull something from nowhere. Is there a thing there that he might need to either have a little look at the shape, or even or look at a little bit of the personnel and get a little bit more creativity into the side?
It is an interesting topic, actually, because for much of the season you could see it working and then not working. So adding Billing in there, I think Billing's been outstanding. I think he's an excellent midfielder. What he brings in a defensive sense has been really, really impressive. And one of the things that characterised Bournemouth is the amount of goals they've conceded. And adding Billing in there really did solidify that central area, just protected the back four. So there was a run in October where we didn't concede many goals. But then at the same time, it's like a seesaw, it just swung the other way. Going forward, you know, there wasn't the same creativity. And that seems to be a key issue that was lacking. And it was very evident against Palace, where both Billing and Lerma, both outstanding players defensively, but in the final third, it was just adding that little bit of spark and taking that risk, taking a player on. So it's a difficult one. I think for a game in transition, it works really well. Bournemouth are really good at that. When when teams are disorganised, they can break teams up high when, you know, when they intercept or make tackles or press high, and then can attack very quickly. But the issue is then, do they have that creative element to the team? And, you know, Eddie Howe has always stuck with that, and even when he does stick with a go to a 3-4-3, which he did against Wolves, and I think he did against City, so there is a tendency, I think, against certain sides for him to play it. But there's always that two. So, you know, a lot of questions have been, well, can he play a three? But in doing that, he's taken away a forward, and he does like to play with two forwards, and it has worked. So it's just finding that balance, really, and at the moment, it looks like, you know, that they found the defensive solidity, they sort of lost that. And then, you know, it's trying to find that creativity again and trying to find that sort of trademark Bournemouth style, really. And whether a free is the answer to that, I don't know. And, you know, I was tweeting about it earlier with a couple of fans. It was, when you do play with a free, you need a player who can push on and affect the final third, sort of a number eight, who, you know, still has that midfield qualities but can also push on and get into the box. And they don't really have that. I mean, Philip Billing is, sort of, it's a holding player, and he's shown signs of pushing on, but he's not really the kind of player to do the box-to-box running. Lerma is 100% a defensive player. You know, he's good at it. You know, he breaks up the play really well, but doesn't have that sort of final third element. Lewis Cook is the one you'd probably look at, but again, whether he can do that sort of running between boxes is a different, you know, it's a different job entirely. And you know, some say that Harry Wilson could play in that number 10 role, and I asked Eddie Howe this on Monday about whether Lewis Cook or Harry Wilson could play there, and he said, yeah, they are definitely roles he could play, because at the moment it's got Dominic Solanke, who's playing the Josh King role, which is sort of behind Wilson and trying to link the play, and that's very effective. But one of the things that separates a Dominic Solanke from, say, a Harry Wilson or a Lewis Cook is his physical attributes. Dominic's got a really good all-round game, and he's actually very good at it, at doing that sort of holding up play and then moving between them. But whether he has that creative side when you have those defensive blocks, that's one of the big issues, really.
Okay. The game then at the weekend, Liverpool come in. Obviously, there was the very tumultuous 4-3 a couple of seasons back now. On the whole, Liverpool have shown they can get results down there. Are you expecting anything different for this one? Do you think that Bournemouth can disrupt Liverpool's momentum? Or do you think that this is a game Bournemouth have just got to almost manage the way through, not used to playing three games in a week, and look to come out the other side?
It's a difficult one. I think Eddie Howe will want a reaction from his players. The nature of the defeat on Tuesday night really was abject. You know,
I watched the last 20 minutes, and I couldn't believe how ponderous Bournemouth were. You know, there was balls were moving around the pitch, but it was 3-4 touch stuff where it should just be 1-2 touch stuff. They really were ponderous.
Yeah, and then there's no penetration either. That was the thing. You're watching it, you're sort of going around in circles, and that's not new. That's what was quite concerning. There's been signs that this does happen to Bournemouth when they have possession of the ball. They're not able to, you know, break through the third, break through the lines, have someone capable of doing that. And, you know, and against 10 men, you shouldn't really have less shots. I think their total shots were 6 shots against Palace. 6 attempts for 70 minutes with an extra player. You know, that's a standard overload thing in training. I think Eddie Howe said it himself. When you do attack v defence, that's what it's about. You give the attacking side an overload, and then they get used to playing with it. It's about making those movements to create those spaces. And you're naturally given one when it's 10-11. And Bournemouth didn't make the most of it. They didn't spread the play quick enough. They didn't move it quick enough. So in that sense, I think for Saturday, Eddie Howe will want a reaction. You know, he'll want something. You can expect higher intensity. And if Bournemouth start brightly, which is what, you know, they normally try to do, you get the fans on side too. And, you know, it can be a difficult place to go. It's a small ground. It's close to the pitch. But, you know, this is a very, very, very impressive Liverpool team. And you're trying to pick out weaknesses in that side, and it's very difficult. It'd be interesting to see how he lines up, but I think the mentality side is what we're looking for, the application. I think he said afterwards on Tuesday he wasn't faulting the players, you know, work rate. You know, it was just the lack of imagination, really. There wasn't the ideas, there wasn't the risk-taking, there wasn't that normal sense of, you know, with the best attacking teams you associate. And then you do associate Bournemouth with attacking football. Eddie Howe likes to associate himself with attacking football, but that's what's been missing. But yeah, for sure, I think the main thing to take will be a reaction, but it will be very, very, it will be a difficult afternoon. And you just wonder if Liverpool score twice early, then heads will drop. And that's the concern, I think, is just confidence. once you're in a run like this, it's 1-10 in all competitions. When you're in that run, you don't want to, you don't want your heads to drop, and you don't want to get turned over again.
Okay, thank you very much to Peter there from The Athletic. Do sign up if you get the opportunity to do so. The Anfield Wrap, theathletic.co.uk/theanfieldwrap for that. Our friends at Football Index have come back to us wanting us to give it another mention, which we obviously will do. I've had a look at it since I discovered it through doing the marketing for it last time out. It's footballindex.co.uk and you can download the app. If you use the code Anfield to sign up, you get the £500 money back guarantee. You can start trading in something you love with Football Index, but obviously do gamble responsibly and do see it as that. BeGambleAware.org. Do make sensible, rational decisions in amongst all of this. But it is the only football stock market, and it is a very interesting advance on the way in which this stuff has been done in the past. An interesting advance, for instance, on just being able to gamble on first goal scorers or anything like that. I think the idea of being able to sort of take a long-term interest in a player, I think, is fascinating. And it's something that, you know, I know so many of you do love your football, obviously. It's why you subscribe or listen to the Anfield Wrap, so this would be an opportunity to maybe have a little think about aspects and look to sort of maybe use some Liverpool insider knowledge that you may well have here and there. I mean, I'm sure that they're pretty on top of it at Football Index, but I do wonder about, for instance, you know, someone like looking at Sheridan Shaqiri or something like that. If you feel as though he's going to get a run of games, you could do a little bit of that. It is worth thinking about, it is worth considering. So yeah, if you are interested, it is footballindex.co.uk. you can download the app, do use our code, they measure this sort of thing and come back to us. So if you get the opportunity to do so, do take a look. But if it isn't for you, we completely and utterly understand that. And as ever, begambleaware.org. Great to speak to Peter at The Athletic about Bournemouth, and Bournemouth who are on this bad run, Steve. And Liverpool can't go into this complacently. I think that's the major thing. And sometimes, you know, in many senses, listen, Bournemouth almost certainly don't get anything out of Liverpool. But if you are Eddie Howe, you are able to say, lads, no one expects us to get anything. This is a bit of a free hit. So Liverpool can't approach this complacently in any way.
No, and you know, the manager knows that now. I think, you know, in the past, it's become such a rare event for us to do that now. You know, I can count on one hand the amount of times we've probably done it. The only problem with the team not playing very well is at some point they've got to turn a corner, and it can be, as you say, a free hit against Liverpool is probably what the way that most teams go to approach a game against us these days, which isn't always helpful, because you can be a bit unpredictable how they set up. They can change a few things, because they can try things, because if it doesn't work, they weren't expected to win anyway. I'm sure the manager, Jürgen, will make a few changes himself and will set us up. You know, we've done all right there the last few years. We've had a couple of sticky times there, but they're long gone now, and I think a few more changes, and I imagine we feel fresh legs, and I think we should be okay, hopefully.
The one thing you can now say with certainty, Paddy, is Eddie Howe doesn't know what team Liverpool are picking, if you know what I mean. Like, for all the work that Bournemouth are going to do prep for Liverpool, they're going to have their ideas about Liverpool, but if you're Eddie Howe, you're sort of looking at your backroom staff and saying, we can say they're going to pick some of these lads, but you've got no idea who.
Yeah, I think it's hard enough playing Liverpool at the moment anyway, but like you said, going into that team, like going into the game and trying to prepare for what team playing, and then even there's not even any way you can G your side up and say, listen, he might be rotating around like this time of year, because all his lads are going to be looking at the derby and saying, well, the lads he brought in are great as well. So I think it's a tricky game for them. They've got a habit, Bournemouth, of, I mean, they're one of them teams that they're probably knocking out for another 10 years, and they always have these little spells where they get a bit close to the bottom, and then he wins about 3 on the bounce and they turn it round. And I'm just hoping, and I think as well, he'll save the Bournemouth mid-season resurgence for after this one.
There's something, James, and I touched on it a little bit with Peter, but I think in general there's something that happens, I think, for sides that don't play European football when this week happens, that it's suddenly they've got to go to the well three times. They've got to play three matches of Premier League football. You know, you look at Bournemouth's little run here, you know, they'll play Saturday, Tuesday, it'll be Saturday again. And they haven't had to do that really that often at any other point of the season. Liverpool, obviously, we can say we've got the squad as well, but I don't think it's even just the squad. I think for the footballers themselves, if you're not used to that sort of mental toll, the way your prep time works, the way the training time's different, fewer days off, all of a sudden it does knock some sides, and we've got to hope Bournemouth is one of them.
Yeah, and you know, it certainly looked that way, didn't it, with their performance in midweek.
They were dreadful, weren't they? I mean, they really were dreadful.
Yeah, I mean, that's a truly horrendous result to get beat by Palace in those circumstances, when you've got an extra man for so long.
And not create, didn't create, I think.
No, and you know, they are stuck in a rut. You know, for, you know, a manager that's been, you know, widely lauded for quite a long time as someone who was destined for bigger and better things. And they also spent a fair few quid, haven't they? I mean, Liverpool have benefited handsomely from a lot of business they've done in the last few years. And of course, you know, they won't be able to call on Harry Wilson on Saturday either, which will be, you know, another loss to them. So I think there'll definitely be changes. I mean, I'd be absolutely amazed if Joe Gomez doesn't come into the back four. He needs a game, and then you'd imagine, you know, even someone like Naby Keita, Klopp mentioned after the game against Everton, said he made 5 changes. He said, I could have made 7, I wasn't quite brave enough. He said Gomez and Keita training so well, and that would be interesting, because I think if Keita doesn't start in this game, then I think if you're him, then the alarm bells are probably ringing in terms of when actually am I going to get a chance, because, you know, he isn't going to be trusted with Salzburg away on Tuesday night.
It's one where Keita plays last season, I think, and he plays quite tidily. The shape's a little different. Yeah. I think Salah's 9, Keita's off the left, bit of a box midfield. And again, that's the other thing that, you know, he's happy to take a couple of risks around this stage of the season. And I think also he backs himself, he backs his backroom staff, he backs the bench, that if he doesn't get it quite right at first, we'll be able to address it. I think there's such a level of security. It's interesting, you know, he says he's not brave enough. There's such a level of security at the moment, isn't there, around the Liverpool manager and everything he does, backing all the decisions that everybody's making around him and backing his decisions in those contexts.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, of course. I mean, you know, you have to look at the bench last night to see the options he's got if things aren't going too well on the pitch with the decisions he makes. But as I said before, he's made that many changes before in December. I think he's been so steady up to now. I think all the players know it's coming and all bang on ready to play if called upon. Mo Salah's got a great record down there. I'd be surprised if you don't see him again. But then obviously we've got a big game on Tuesday, which is now become very, very, very important to the club. So there will be eyes on that as well for the manager.
Tuesday is looming all over this fixture, Paddy. If there's one minor concern for Liverpool, it is the idea that maybe they might try and manage it out too early in the game. You know, if they get one or two ahead and feel as though they've just got to manage it through. There will be, you know, they're not human if they're not looked. They need to get through against Salzburg. They're not human if they haven't got one eye on it. And, you know, we can talk all we want about one game at a time, and we can say that they are mentality monsters and all this. That is true. Yeah. But they will not want, as European champions, they will not want to go out the Champions League at the group stage. And so maybe Klopp's got to be aware of that. And it might actually be a smart move to pick maybe 2 or 3, maybe even 4 or 5 of the players who don't actually reasonably expect to start against Salzburg off the basis of the fact that they can just focus in on this game.
Yeah, there's a case to be made for a few of them, and it's hard thinking about who, though, because you think Henderson starts in Salzburg, but then gets a rest last night, albeit comes on. I think the big thing is the midfield, and the midfield that goes in Salzburg, I think you could see a couple of them rested. You look up the likes, when does Wijnaldum get a rest, and because he seems to play every game and things like that, and I think that's why I think Keita will come in. I think it could be the one where Wijnaldum gets arrested. It's interesting when we mentioned, I think, during the break about he seems to be doing similar things to this time last year, and it was this time last year when the midweek one was Burnley away, and then it was Bournemouth at the weekend, and Keita, Burnley away, you could argue was his best performance for in a Liverpool shirt, and he sort of plays virtually in a 2 with Henderson, and he's got Henderson looking after him, and I think that's something I'd like to see at the weekend, because I think against Bournemouth it's always a tricky game and things, but they'll sort of let you play a bit, and they're not going to be right on top of you, and the crowds are not one of them where it's going to be on top of you. So if you have Keita sitting in the middle in a 2 with Henderson, maybe even Chamberlain in front of him, Wijnaldum and maybe Milner, the lads you probably you could see out in Salzburg, I think that could be a really good option for the weekend. Like,
at some point you can go through the list of, at some point someone's got to get a rest. I'm not going to go all the way to Virgil van Dijk, because I think Virgil will decide that as much as anybody else, James, but I think you can look at the 2 fullbacks as well and just wonder if asking them to play the way they play for Liverpool, both of them back to back, Wednesday, Saturday, Tuesday, does feel like a little bit of an ask. It wouldn't surprise me if Milner actually gets on the pitch, but maybe at the expense of one of them, and then whichever one of them gets the rest comes on after 60 for the other, and a bit of that goes on for this for Liverpool.
Yeah, spot on. I can see Milner starting at fullback, and I think, you know, this is going to be it now, isn't it, for this month, without a shadow of a doubt. I think 3, 4, or 5 changes from game to game. You know, just juggling his resources, and you know, the huge thing going into the weekend. Is I think what a game like that does in midweek, just for the whole mood around the entire squad, just seeing people that have had so few opportunities just suddenly step in and deliver like that. And I think, you know, even for Gomez and Keita, I think that gives them a lift as well, you know, when they get their chance.
I think that's massive to say, isn't it? You know, and also what it means is that if you are, for instance, playing with one of the lads who's been drafted in, and it shouldn't feel, and I think that's never been there, but it reinforces, you know, these are the lads who beat Barcelona, these are the lads who beat Everton, these are the lads who know this, Steve. And I think that is massive, isn't it, that idea that I'm looking around this dressing room and I'm not really that bothered who it is who's got a shirt on. It's not like, for instance, you got the impression it was when, you know, Torres didn't start, yeah, and everyone would be going, oh, well, you're playing and go. That hurts a dressing room's mood before a ball's kicked, whereas you get the impression this Liverpool side, they're all looking at each other, whichever 11, and thinking, yeah, we can win this.
Yeah, I mean, as James alluded to before, you get the impression that every single player is 100% ready to step in at any time, and because for the training is made that intense and that game specific that you know, when called upon, that any player can step in and perform to the same level as another player who would have been there ahead of him. You know, it's the one thing that's revolutionised this squad for me under the manager. I think he's changed. Whereas in the past, you know, if anyone wasn't playing, if they get that one bad apple who's got a face on him, who's sulking, that can have such a detrimental effect to a squad for me. And it's one thing that the Jürgen has completely stamped out from any well, for what we can see from the outside looking in, it's what he's completely stamped out as a manager for, you know, any player who's got a face on him whinging, you know, they don't stick around long, they're usually gone.
I think the point about the intensity of training is important as well, because I think it felt a lot last night that although Sadio Mane is not playing with the usual lads he plays with, it's almost as if, like, it felt at times like he'd been on like the same 11 aside team as Lallana and Origi and Shaqiri. Like, the touches now got out, the little flicks and things, it was almost like he wasn't phased at all by it. It was just like, well, I've trained with these and I've played matches and training with these before and I know these are great. So I think that goes back to the point of, because of how well they train together and how close and tight knit the squad is, like Steve said, none of the players looking at each other going, oh, he's any less than the person who was in last week and I was playing with. They all trust each other, they all know how good each other are, and whoever comes in will back themselves as well to know that they belong on the side.
Are we all predicting victories for Liverpool against Bournemouth? No, none of you are looking at me with huge concern.
I'd like to think so, yeah. We've got a decent record there. It's all about, I'd like to see us be a bit more defensively sharper than we've been in a couple of games recently, just a couple of lapses of concentration, maybe a bit of casual playing. Just a little bit.
The second half clean sheet last night, yeah, to me, felt significant, Steve. Yeah. I think, yeah, I felt a little very bit like good. You sent them out there saying, you're not conceding again.
Yeah.
You're not conceding again against Everton. We're not having that. And it's almost like build from this moment. I do wonder about that, because I think they could do with just getting a clean sheet soon.
Definitely. I mean, I think the first goal was a bit unlucky last night, because Degsy puts a block in and it falls nicely for Keane. So I'm not going to harbour too much blame for that one. You know, but the second one could be, you could point the finger at two or three. It's a poor ball from Trent. It could get closed down again quicker. You know, Lovren could be better. Van Dijk would be better. The keeper could be better. It's just lapses of concentration, I think, for me. But as you said, the second half, they were a lot more robust and a lot tighter. I think you'd love to go there with a victory and a clean sheet would be the order of the day for the manager.
Excellent stuff indeed. Thank you very much to Paddy, to Steve and to James and everyone else who contributed this week to the weekend. Take it easy. Enjoy whatever it is you're doing. Liverpool, 3 o'clock, Saturday. Bournemouth, going to be the absolute business. Sports Social Podcast Network.